That Great Business Show. Winner, highly commended award, Irish Podcast Awards.
Welcome to episode 180 of That Great Business Show, home of great business tips, insights, and opportunities on every episode, delivered in our usual commute-friendly package. Unlock the full potential of your business with Mentors Work, Ireland's award-winning, fully government-funded mentoring program designed to fuel the growth of your business, no matter the sector or size. Mentors Work will help transform your business by providing tailored guidance through one-on-one mentoring sessions, upskilling workshops, as well as networking opportunities. Together with your mentor, you'll also craft a customized six-month business plan to propel your business forward. Tried and tested, and already empowering over 3,000 Irish businesses, register for free today on mentorswork.ie. I'm Conal O'Mora in Fáilte Isteach. On episode 177, expattaxes.ie boss Stephanie Wickham told us where in the world to get the best tax deal for your business. And on this episode, we've found another perfectly legal way to get around Brexit costs when buying from Britain. And for the pub quizzers amongst you, you know that Leo Varadkar, Enda Kenny, and you too all made the cover of Time magazine. But what you should have known is that an Irish robot also made the cover, and its creator joins us in studio to talk about her robots that she hopes to clean up with.
De facto, the revolutionary shaving oil, changing the face of shaving. For the smoothest shave of your life, just add water. No more lathering up or cleaning up afterward. Just add a few drops of water and you're ready to go. De facto's blend of all natural oils hydrates and protects your skin. No more razor burns or irritation. A spa treatment for your face. Perfect for all skin types and lasts so much longer than traditional foams or gels. De facto, a shaving revolution. Just add water. Available from selected pharmacies and from defactoshave.com.
It's all go, let Chrissy know on thatgreatbusinessshow.com. That great business show.
Now, we keep reminding you that given Northern Ireland's special status, its unique position, being in the UK as well as being in and out of the EU at the same time, the business possibilities there are enormous. There's also another business attraction in Northern Ireland, and one that you should be aware of. In Jonesboro, very, very close to Newry, exactly 1 hour door-to-door from Dublin, and within easy reach for probably half the Republic's population, is a home to Oopods. That's where you can rest your goods that you buy from the UK, pop across the border, and perfectly legally collect your goods, with no extra taxes to pay. John Toohey is founder of Oopod, and he joined us previously, exactly 2 years ago, on episode 80, when he had just launched Oopod. He's back now because he has recently raised 5 million euro to expand further across the island of Ireland, as well as launching in Britain. John Toohey, welcome back to That Great Business Show.
Oh, thanks, Conal. It's a pleasure to be here, and thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. 5 million quid. That's a chunk of money.
5.4 million to be exact.
Oh, very and precise.
It brings 8.5 million, the amount that we've raised so far to expand our network of Oopod self-service parcel lockers in Ireland and Northern Ireland, which is important market for us for our plans to launch on into mainland UK then after that. I hate to call it the mainland, but that's it's kind
we'll
of...
call it Britain. Call it Britain GB, and Northern Ireland. Yeah. GB, Great Britain, we'll call it that. But so therefore the plans are, because you've been working on this now so for 2 years,
yes,
kind of it's slow momentum, but then it like a lot of the things in business, it can suddenly take off.
Yeah, it's the kind of business, it's a bit like, I'd use the comparison, it's a bit like building a railway. So you have to make the plans, buy the land and put the tracks down and then put the carriages on. So for us, it's about acquiring partners and sites.
Is that a problem, finding the sites?
It's not really a problem. I mean, we have some great partners in Lidl and Tesco, where most of our Oopods are located now. And they really like having them on their premises because it provides a service for the community and also gives them additional footfall that comes to the store. And we know it's kind of taken as a universal given in the parcel locker business that if a customer has gone to a retail premises to pick up a package from a locker or drop one off, 60% or higher they'll go in the store to buy something while they're there. So it's an attractive and proven footfall driver for retailers. Lidl and Tesco stores are just perfect locations because they're so easy to access. It's barrier-free parking and, you know, they're within walking distance of so many residential areas and so on that it really takes a lot of boxes for us. For those guys who have already done the research, because so if it's a good idea to have a Lidl or a Tesco in a location, then the chances are it's a good place to have a parcel locker as well. So when I say acquiring sites, so then when we agree sites with a Lidl, Tesco or leading independent stores around the country, then we just have a little bit of preparation work to get the site ready because we need a power supply and we just need to make sure the ground is level enough and safe enough for us to put the parcel locker there. Yeah, so there's a bit of preparation and then you'll see a burst of activity then as we get, we roll out parcel lockers to those sites, but the preparation work has already been done in the background to that has taken possibly weeks or even months to get those prepared, you know.
So the land grab is on.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's a land
because
grab.
Is it like that? Are there other people who would like to grab the same land and do the same as you?
Not so much in Ireland. I mean, we're the only parcel locker operator in Ireland now.
How come?
I don't know. I think we're just, I suppose, a little bit ahead of the pack. The UK has several parcel locker operators now.
And that's why you want to go in there?
The UK, I suppose the difference between Ireland and the UK for us is in Ireland we're establishing a market. In the UK, we're addressing a well-established market. So out of home is what would be the overarching description of parcel lockers and the ability to go to what we call a PUDO, which is your corner store, to pick up or drop off your parcel at your local newsagents or your local corner store.
What did you call it?
They're referred to in the trade as PUDOs, pick-up and drop-off points.
But of course.
And then OOH is out of home. So it's anything really, that covers anything that's out of home, whether that's a parcel locker or
I suppose
PUDO.
Because I have used your OOPOD in Northern Ireland, I should explain to people exactly how it works. So maybe actually, why not let you explain what the whole concept is? I'm familiar with it.
Yeah, I think what you alluded to there in your opening remarks was our PUDO store. We have an actual parcel shop, a premises in Jonesboro, just over the border, not quite as far as Newry for people that would be familiar with going to Newry for cross-border shopping.
It's only minutes from Newry.
It's all it is, yeah. It's just off Junction 20 on the M1, so that's about 40 minutes from Dublin Airport. So it's really, really convenient for anyone, say, in North County Dublin or further north. And that's just one of our locations, really, but it's very, very popular because it means that customers can shop online on UK stores that some have stopped shipping to Ireland because of customs regulations and formalities and so on. And they can use any of our locations in Northern Ireland, but the one in Jonesboro is really popular because we have the actual parcel shop there with staff there. And we also have a fitting room there. So it wouldn't be unusual for a customer from Dublin to order 10 items on online UK stores, have them all delivered to our store, our parcel shop in Jonesboro, and then go there maybe on a Saturday morning, try everything on and keep the ones they like or the colours or the sizes, and then they can leave the returns there at the store and we'll arrange for the courier to come and take them back to the retailers, because returning items to retailers online shopping world is about 30 to 40%, certainly 40% of apparel that's bought online gets returned to retailers.
Must be a nightmare for them.
It's a huge industry by itself. I mean, the global figure for apparel in particular that's returned to retailers online is almost reaching, it's around $800 to $900 billion now. So it's a whole industry by itself. Yeah. Returns on reverse logistics, we call it, yeah. So for customers, what's very popular for customers is order on UK online stores, have it delivered to particularly Jonesboro, and they can pick it up either from the locker there, or they can go inside and check, use the fitting room, or if it's a larger item, we can do oversized items in the store. So
how large is large? You need double beds?
We don't go for that. Our restriction is 0.25 of a cubic meter, which is about the size of a standard domestic wheelie bin outside. So it's not domestic appliances. The store just wouldn't be big enough to handle that. We don't have, you know, the equipment there to handle large, really large and heavy items or commercial goods or so as such. So it's really just if it's something like a small piece of flat pack furniture or that kind of thing, or a bike or a flat screen TV, that kind of stuff, we can receive it in the store and you can pick it up there. So because the people ask me about this, is this, you know, is this all above board with customs and everything else? Because it's cross-border shopping and you're going in person to pick the merchandise up, then it's different to having it shipped from shipped cross-border. So it's perfectly legitimate. It's the same as if you go to a supermarket in Newry to do your big shop, or if you get a flight to London to do some shopping on Oxford Street. It's exactly the same thing.
It's a leftover of when the British ran the operations here. It's where we benefit from that. Because we can, I don't know, can we be citizens? Well, we have particular rights anyway from 1923 or something like that.
Yeah, I think Ireland are excluded. I think the Irish are excluded as aliens under the aliens, definition of aliens in the UK legislation. Yeah. But it's not even just that. This is just really about, I think it's about 14% of the population of Ireland make at least one cross-border shopping trip. These are CSO figures, by the way. From 2018. And I think it's 14% of all people in Ireland make at least one cross-border shopping trip per year. And about 20% of the population of Dublin makes a cross-border shopping trip. So really, we're just there to help with the passing traffic.
Of course
you
are.
They can order online and pick up while they're they can make a short diversion while they're on the way to Newry.
What you forgot to mention is how much would it cost to have whatever, to pick up there?
Oh, it's $3.95 is the standard cost.
And pounds or euro?
That's euro. And yeah, you can pay in pounds or euro. And it's all online. So we don't accept payment at the store or anything like that. So you just book, you just register online and when the parcel arrives.
Tell me this, drugs. Do you ever get drug shipments?
Well, we don't know what's in the parcels that arrive. So, I mean, they would go through a customs process anything that arrives at our store or lockers has already been through customs and all the rest of it. So we assume that, and we're not customs, so we assume that they've done their bit before that, yeah, you know.
Now, 5.4 million, is that what you said?
5.4 million, yeah.
What are you going to do with it?
So we're going to use that money to buy more parcel lockers because we want to, right now we have about 120 parcel locker locations around Ireland, between Ireland and Northern Ireland on the island of Ireland. So we want to get that number up to about 300.
Okay, doubling.
We'll do that within the next 12 months. And then...
And where do you buy a locker?
We buy them from manufacturers in China, and we ship them in from Shenzhen in China, and they come in containers and then we roll them out from there. So they're made to our design by an outsourced manufacturer in China. And we're hoping to get to 300 locations within 12 months. We'll certainly have 250 by year end. And that'll give us really good coverage and help us develop the other plans that we have for our parcel lockers, which are to facilitate customers returning goods to online retailers. That's a really popular use for parcel lockers. To onboard more carriers, because in Ireland right now we have UPS as a major carrier who use the lockers as if it was their own infrastructure. And then in Northern Ireland we have UPS and Yodel. A lot of people in Ireland would never have heard of Yodel, but they're the third largest domestic parcel carrier in the UK.
And they have just bought or about to buy?
They've been acquired.
In the UK.
They were actually owned by the Barclay family
UK. It, yeah. Who owned the Telegraph or used to own
Absolutely,
the Telegraph.
Absolutely, yeah. They've sold it. Yeah. They've just sold it now and another logistics business has acquired it. And
Have you been onto them yet?
Well, Yodel are already a client of ours, and our contract with Yodel is actually held through a third party, which is PayPoint in the UK. So it's a sort of a three-way relationship. So our contract is with PayPoint in the UK, and then Yodel would be a major client of theirs. So we're integrated with Yodel. So Yodel and UPS in Northern Ireland would be using their parcel lockers every day. But we're hoping to acquire more of those large carriers as a sort of, I suppose you'd call them anchor tenants to use, and they use the parcel locker infrastructure as if it was their own while we develop out other ideas, you know.
And then Britain, what are you going to do in Britain?
Well, we're using Northern Ireland as a testing ground really for the wider UK market at the moment, because all of the attributes of the UK market are present in Northern Ireland. So we have all the UK carriers, for example, we have Yodel in Northern Ireland, we don't have them in the south. And then we've all the retailers in Northern Ireland that are operating in the UK. So we're working with the carriers there just to refine the product a bit more. And as soon as that's ready, then we'll tackle some of the major conurbations in the UK then after that.
Starting with?
That'll really depend on the carriers themselves. So we'll go where the carriers will have heat maps as to where their activity is strongest, and they'll recommend where we need to go. But certainly the major conurbations, what's referred to as the M62 corridor in the north of England. So if you go from Leeds to Liverpool, that part of the UK, believe it or not, has a higher concentration of online shopping as a percentage of all retail. It's actually higher in that part of the UK than it is on average elsewhere. And the reason for that is the heritage of mail order shopping and catalogue shopping that has transferred to. So you might remember episodes. Yeah, you'd probably be a Coronation Street fan, Connell. You'd remember episodes.
I can safely say I don't think I've ever watched it. There you go. Well, so you're talking to the wrong boy.
Well, some of your listeners might remember that years ago. You'd remember episodes of Coronation Street where somebody would have the catalogue.
I remember catalogues.
And the neighbours would all come in and order from the catalogue, and one neighbour then would put the order in and all this kind of stuff. So there was a very strong heritage of that in the northwest of England. And that has
still are. I mean, you can still see them in the British newspapers that there are catalogues still available.
Yeah, no, catalogue sales would have really transferred into online shopping. And that part of England, the northwest of England, the heritage of catalogue shopping and mail order shopping has transferred into it being just slightly higher than the rest of the UK in terms of the percentage of online shopping the percentage of all retail that's online is higher in that part of the UK than elsewhere.
And when you're doing your land grab over in the UK or over in Britain, can you piggyback on your relationships with Tesco and Lidl here?
Well, certainly we'd have established the relationship here. And, you know, if you travel around Europe, for example, and go to any Lidl store, you'll find parcel lockers of one flavour of another outside.
And do they have them in the UK?
They do indeed, yeah.
So you have to bump somebody out?
Not really. We don't look for exclusivity because at the end of the day, if our parcel lockers go beside a competitor's parcel lockers or just parcel lockers provided by somebody else, say, for example, Amazon have their own parcel lockers in the UK, thousands of them. They have about 8,000 locations in the UK.
Oh, that'd be a lovely one to get, wouldn't it?
So that'd be a nice
one. You get out to Jeff and say, listen, I could help you out here.
Absolutely. So, I mean, that's, and if you go to really mature markets like, say, Estonia, where parcel lockers are a well-established way of doing business, about 90% or more of all items bought online in Estonia and in the Baltics generally are collected from parcel lockers, right? So if you went to a shopping mall, a bit like, you know, especially sort of out-of-town shopping malls, the big box ones, as they call them in America, it wouldn't be unusual to see parcel lockers there side by side from seven different parcel companies all operating their own parcel lockers. They're mature markets and those guys would have rolled out that parcel locker infrastructure thinking that we're going to keep it closed and control it for ourselves and don't allow competitors to use it to give us a competitive advantage. But now everybody has parcel lockers and they've been quite an eyesore. Same in Poland. You could pass by on a street in Krakow or Warsaw, you could see five or six different parcel lockers from different service providers. So what we're trying to do here is say, okay, parcel lockers are becoming an established way of doing business in the UK and Europe. What we're trying to do here is provide open infrastructure so that everybody doesn't need their own parcel lockers. They can use ours instead, and that it's a shared infrastructure for everybody to use.
You're very kind to help them, aren't you?
Yeah, but if you think about it, the banks learned that lesson at a very early stage from rolling out ATMs. Banks would have had the same attitude at the start that we're going to be ahead of the posse and have an ATM network of our own, and that's going to give us a competitive advantage over our competing banks. But I think then very soon they realised what an expensive outing that was going to be.
Yep.
So, you know, it wasn't, I mean, the first ATMs in Ireland were in the mid-1980s, I think. And by the end of the 1980s, banks were already sharing their ATM infrastructure so that you could use your card in any bank in Ireland. So I think the same thing applies in parcel locker infrastructure. And actually, we refer to them as APMs, automated parcel machines, instead of ATMs. So it's the same principle really should apply that. We as independent agnostic providers of infrastructure can provide infrastructure for large carriers to use and share. It's zero capex for them and very low apex, you know.
Now, you hinted that there were other ideas that you have for these. What are you thinking?
So, yeah, I mean, the market, for example, you know, some of your listeners might be familiar with the company Vinted, which is a Lithuanian
company. I might not watch Coronation Street, but I do see what comes into the house.
Yeah, so Vinted is it's just a platform where people buy and exchange or sell to each other mainly secondhand apparel, but they'll go for any kind of merchandise really, but it's mainly apparel that's swapped and exchanged. So it's really popular in the UK. Vinted right now in the UK would be doing about 2 million transactions per week Yeah.
Okay.
And in France, they would be doing about 2 million transactions per day right now.
Oh my God.
So, and Vinted, believe it or not, Vinted actually even have their own parcel locker network in Paris and in the major cities in France, because they facilitate, they have their own logistics backbone called Vinted Go. So this is where the market for the fastest growing aspect of e-commerce in Europe right now is actually in C2C, consumer to consumer. And it's the fast growing part. And then it's mainly where customers are selling pre-owned or second-hand clothing and footwear to each other. So that market is expected to grow to about 30 billion euro in value in Europe by 2027. And parcel lockers are a great way to facilitate that, because people in a local area might like to buy and sell to each other, but don't necessarily want to meet each other, or don't want somebody coming to the house or going to somebody else's house.
And you mentioned that this is already happening in Dublin, suburb of Clontarf.
Yeah, in Clontarf, we've seen Clontarf Free Cycle, which is a Facebook group that of local residents in Clontarf who, if they have some items, unwanted gifts or something in the house that they, that's, you know, possibly unopened or still new, and they'll put it up on Clontarf Free Cycle and then drop it to the local UPOD at Spar on Stiles Road for the local neighbours to pick up. So they can swap and exchange stuff with each other. There isn't, a lot of the time, there isn't even a financial consideration. They just want to give stuff away that they don't, that's unwanted, and they'd put it in the parcel locker and one of the neighbours will pick it up that wants it. So that it's a way of facilitating this kind of thing without people having to meet each other.
I love talking to people like you, because you're in love with your business. You haven't got a note anywhere. It's all in your head. And I'd say when you're walking around, you're looking at UPODs here, UPODs there, possibilities here, possibilities there. I love all of that stuff. So I could, and I would love to have you back again to talk even more, but we have got to ask you your final question, as who would John Toohey hire in a heartbeat?
Okay, well, so before I answer that question, I have to tell you about my new board, which is fantastic. And we've just, you wanted some exclusive news, Conal.
So, oh, yes, please.
So I can announce today that Philip Reynolds has joined us as our chairman now.
Fantastic.
Philip, formerly of C&D Pet
Foods.
Yes,
I was Albert's son, isn't that?
Absolutely, yeah. He doesn't like to be referred to as Albert's son, though. Okay, he used to be the man that brought C&D Pet Foods from being 15 million turnover when he took it over as CEO. And when he exited it, it was turning over 500 million.
And I have something hoping in the pipeline about somebody who's doing some business with them who are going to come on here. But anyway,
So we have my new board to talk about. And I also have Johnny Cosgrove from Temver, which is the investment office of the Carton family.
Yep, I've interviewed Rich Carton. I mean, lovely, lovely guys. They were the Eggmen. It's not right. Yeah,
the chicken people, really.
Chicken, yeah.
Chickens. I think. Oh, well,
yeah.
Food. Anyway, yeah. Let's put it that way.
Actually, this is back in radio days. He told me about bringing chickens in. If it's got a bone on it, it could be from Ireland. If it hasn't got a bone on it, it very likely is not from Ireland.
Wow. Okay.
Highland.
Yeah.
Oh, get a chicken tongue.
So we have our new board. So we've got Stephen Burdock from BVP, because they were the lead investor in the last round. Then Johnny Cosgrove joined the board. We already have Gareth Thornton from JMC Logistics. So we have a fantastic experience around the board.
They'll keep you under the cosh.
They will, of course, yeah. And Philip just announced this week as our chairman, which is fantastic. So that experience around the board is really great.
Bad board.
But having said that, I suppose who would I hire in a heartbeat? I think would have to be Rafael Brusca.
So Rafael was the... I can honestly say that I have not heard of Rafael and Brusca, is it?
B-R-Z-O-S-K-A.
Thank you.
He was the founder of InPost, which is the largest parcel locker network, certainly in Europe now, if not in the world. So it was a Polish company that he founded. And my previous business, Parcel Motel, that some of your listeners might be familiar with, I bought the technology and those parcel lockers from InPost back in the day when Rafael was in his early stages of growing that business. So he sold the business. He sold a large stake in the business to Advent, the large private equity company, in 2017, kept 10%. I think they paid 50 million for the business at the time in 2017. And they floated on the Amsterdam Stock Exchange in 2021 with a valuation of 9 billion euro.
And he owns only 10% of that.
Yeah, listen, only 10%. Sure, you get by on that, I'm sure, you know.
So, happy days.
Yeah, so Rafael is a great European
Have
entrepreneur.
Have you met him?
Oh, several times, yeah.
So he knows you, so he's ready to join.
Hopefully.
That is brilliant.
Yeah.
It's a great story, and we obviously will track it, and we'll have you back when you go on to the M62, is that what you said to me, in the UK, and we'll see how many units you can buy there.
Well, definitely you'll see us at most Lidl's and most Tesco's in Ireland before that. As you say, at leading independents and some petrol stations as well, hopefully, you know.
Yeah, it's always leading. It's never the kind of seconds or the thirds, isn't it?
No, well, you see, it's a premium brand, so we only look for premium sites, I think, you know. And that's what our customers want.
Good. Very good. All right. That's John Toohey, founder of OOPod. And thanks so much for joining us on That Great Business Show.
That Great Business Show.
De Facto, the revolutionary shaving oil, changing the face of shaving. For the smoothest shave of your life, just add water. No more lathering up or cleaning up afterward. Just add a few drops of water and you're ready to go. De Facto's blend of all natural oils hydrates and protects your skin. No more razor burns or irritation. A spa treatment for your face. Perfect for all skin types and lasts so much longer than traditional foams or gels. De Facto, a shaving revolution. Just add water. Available from selected pharmacies and from defactoshave.com.
That Great Business Show. Winner, highly commended award. Irish Podcast Awards.
My guest has a degree in engineering, a master's in AI and machine learning, has won national awards for her AI research, was awarded the prestigious EU Women Innovators Prize by the European Commission, was identified by Silicon Republic as one of 20 women doing fascinating work in AI, machine learning and data science, and recognized globally as one of 50 women in robotics you need to know about by RoboHub. Niamh Donnelly is co-founder of Acara, maker of the world's most advanced disinfection robot. And why would anyone want a disinfection robot? Well, when I tell you that there are over 140,000 healthcare facilities across North America and Europe, with more than 17 million treatment rooms that need to be disinfected, now you are talking about a massive market. At Acara, Niamh oversees the development of artificial intelligence and machine learning, as you do. She played a key role in the development and validation of Stevie the robot, which is the one that featured on the cover of Time magazine in 2019. Niamh is currently leading the development of the software and autonomy of Violet, an autonomous robot developed by Acara to disinfect frontline healthcare settings. Niamh Donnelly, welcome to That Great Business Show.
Thanks so much, and thank you for the intro. It was really good.
And there's another one that you're going to do now, because we asked some random questions.
Okay.
You are obviously so bright. How many points did you get in your Leaving Cert?
Oh my God, I can't even remember that. How many did I get?
I bet you got 600 or 605,000.
No, I didn't. I suffer from nerves. During the exam, I remember I had a freak out and just a few of them really messed them up. I think I got late 400s, I think it was, 450.
That's very disappointing. Do you want to leave now? This is a job interview.
I don't know. Some of the smartest, most successful people in the world didn't even do college. So
that's absolutely true. We would believe in that and all. So tell me about how in the name of did you end up in robots, with robots?
Well, I guess I was always interested in software development and AI. And while that's so interesting in terms of data science and, you know, what OpenAI is doing, what I really found interesting is embodied AI. So building machines that have artificial intelligence.
Did you just call it bodied?
Embodied AI.
Embodied.
Yeah, yeah.
New term to me.
Yeah, one of the most fascinating things is when you write a piece of code for a robot, you run the code on the robot and it does something. And, you know, you build an autonomous navigation planner. You don't know exactly which way the robot's going to go. It makes up its own plan. And I just always found that really fascinating, just how machines can think almost.
They're going to take over the world.
In a good way.
But maybe not. Maybe your Violet is actually going to be called Violent. So you sat down and you obviously played around with all of this, but then you've made it into a business. So there are, it's actually quite a large business at this stage. How many people are working there?
Well, we're 10 people. Yeah. So it is big. We started out actually as a research group in Trinity College. So we got the competitive start fund from EI to build our first prototype. And that was the first robot you mentioned, Stevie. So we got...
Did you call him Stevie?
We called him Stevie. No, it wasn't me. I actually joined a little bit later in the research group.
But when you came into the room, did you say, hello, Stevie?
That's what... Yeah, that used to be the wake-up word you would use. So if you wanted Stevie to talk, you would say, hello, Stevie.
Freaky.
Yeah. And it had kind of head following, so it would follow people's heads as it... As it moved around. But yeah, we deployed it in a nursing home in Washington, D.C. in the U.S. And I actually lived in the nursing home for 3 months while we deployed the robot and kind of saw how the retirement community reacted to it. And it was really fascinating. It was probably one of the best summers ever. I loved living in a nursing home. It was really nice, you know, dinner at 8, in bed by 10. It was brilliant. But no, it was really, you kind of saw... You know, the benefit that robots can have. The healthcare worker shortage is crazy. The WHO predict that by 2030, there'll be a 15 million healthcare worker shortage. Yeah, okay. So it's chaos. And I feel that if we don't start embracing robots now, you know, we'll be stuck in the future.
And what happened to poor old Stevie?
Stevie is in Trinity now. So used by researchers. So there's a robotic
slab. And you've left him behind.
Yeah, so the idea for Violet actually came from Stevie. So when we were in the nursing home, we were asking them, you know, what are your biggest problems? And the number one reason why older adults go to hospital from a nursing home is not because of a fall or a sickness, it's actually because they catch an infection. So it's the number one reason. And we looked into what ways are we cleaning nursing homes? Are we cleaning hospitals? And it hasn't changed since the Spanish flu pandemic. So we're still cleaning the exact same way.
Which for some people may not remember was 1918.
There you go. I knew that. I didn't.
So it's a little over 100 years ago.
Yeah, so we're still using bleach the same way.
But bleach works.
Actually, the UK, there's a study done in the UK showing that, you know, C. diff, it's really, really awful disease, especially for older adults. There was a study showing that bleach was about as effective as ordinary water against it. So there's this thing called superbugs where we're not killing them right, where UV actually breaks down the DNA of the virus.
And UV is ultraviolet.
Ultraviolet,
which of course means that's where the name Violet presumably comes
from. Yes, exactly,
yeah. So your pal, Ultra, that's her surname, her first name. You've been working on her for how long?
So it's been about 2 to 3 years now. So it's a long process because it's not something that's commonly used in hospitals. What we had to do starting out was basically publish research to show that this works. So we would go into hospitals, we would do microbial testing before and after they did the manual clean, and then we would do it before and after we did our UV clean, and we were able to show that it was a lot more effective at killing bacteria.
How much more?
It's a hard kind of way to define, but it's a lot quicker. So manual cleaning can take up to 3 hours.
For a ward or for a room?
For a room if there's been an infectious patient in it. They have to, so hospitals can either clean fast or they can clean well. If they want to do both, it takes about 3 hours. So our robot can do it in about 20 minutes. And we've shown that they have equivalent microbial reduction within that 20 minutes.
But did you tell me that you also still have to have your cleaner?
Yeah. So you, to remove manual dirt once a day, you would need to have a cleaner to do that. And then on top of that, rather than having the manual cleaner kind of go in again, you would be able to use a UV robot.
But in terms of a business, that means that you are going to land them with extra cost where they thought that they were going to replace the cleaner.
But the thing is, it's not actually about that. It's about getting the room back. So it's about reducing the room downtime. So if you think of an X-ray ward, they're doing maybe 10 to 15 procedures. Now with faster cleaning, they could do 30 to 40. So it's about being able to increase the number of procedures that they're doing. And that's what we kind of learned that the long way when we went in, trying to find what the ROI to the hospital was very difficult. And now we actually work with a healthcare economist in the UK to help us kind of define that. And we got accepted to the Digital Health London Accelerator. And so that was essentially created because it's so difficult to sell to healthcare groups. So they link you with a NHS navigator that basically helps you get your product into healthcare settings. And we kind of got our first sale this year through that. So
this year?
Yeah, this year. So
this is just, only the beginning of the year. Yes, so that's brilliant. Yeah. That's really
great. It's really good. So we're really kind of, it's kind of taking off now. We've gotten CE marked. That took a while. We've done all the research. So we're kind of just on our way now to making sales.
But tell me this, are you the only people in the world doing this? Surely over COVID, I'm positive that I saw other ultraviolet cleaners being released out.
Yeah, there's a couple of companies that do it. So some of them would be more like, they wouldn't actually be a robot. So they would be on wheels and you would have to plug them in. And, you know, that means that they can only be used in certain areas of the hospital. Also, they can't be used alongside people. So our robot has AI to be able to detect people in a room and shine the light away from people and on surfaces. Our robot's also autonomous, so it doesn't need someone to come in and push it around.
But how does it travel? Is it wheels or?
Yeah, wheels. Yeah. So you
not
kind
little
of
legs.
No. But that is becoming an area. Humanoid robots is a really big area right now in the US. But no, we chose wheels.
And it is, as I mentioned, a vast market if you can crack it.
Yeah, it really is. And I think there's so little, not so little competition, but it is a difficult thing to do. You know, we're at the intersection of hardware and healthcare. And there are two areas that are kind of difficult to get funding in. They're difficult to break through. But if you do, and there's so many areas in hospitals to really innovate, everything's done manually. So we don't just have the robot. We've actually streamlined the whole process with giving cleaners and patient flow teams apps that they can use to call a cleaner, log cleaning. Whereas before they were writing it all down and they were using pagers. The first time I saw a pager was like a couple of weeks ago in a hospital. So
I remember
it's really
pagers,
weird.
And that was a long time
they're
ago.
They're still using
them. I actually did think they were gone, but they're still alive.
Yeah,
are they?
In hospitals. Okay, yeah. But it's just really amazing to
you
see that.
You couldn't have had a TV series for a set in a medical setting without that beep 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 beep.
Yeah.
Emergency.
Yeah, it really is like that. I got to use one. So we kind of have built the infrastructure as well for them to be able to move people in and out of the hospital as fast as possible, because that's what we want, really.
And who has funded you to date? You mentioned Enterprise Ireland.
Yeah. So Enterprise Ireland, we raised a pre-seed round by an angel group called Growing Capital by Gianni Matera. And then
where are
we've
they?
Also,
I haven't heard of them.
They're an angel group. They're across Europe and Ireland. And then we also got funding through the European Innovation Council, so Horizon 2020. And that was...
Was that a nightmare to apply for? People tell me that you have to write a Bible too.
You do. And it's like an interview process. And it is a nightmare to apply for, but I think it is vital for the success of a lot of deep tech companies in Europe. And because it's really difficult to get funding to build your first prototype. You know, if you go to institutional investors and say, I have this idea to build a robot that will move around hospitals.
The door.
They'll say, here's the door. So they really do give you not just the funding, but they help you with further fundraising, with events, with training, with like healthcare economists, with all the supports that you need to be able to succeed. So it's really a vital fund for European deep tech startups.
And you are funding again?
Yeah, we're raising right now.
How much?
That's undisclosed right now. But it will be considered a seed round.
Okay, so it's small enough yet.
Yes.
Mind you, a seed round, depending on the cycle, the investment cycle, can go from hundreds of thousands to tens of millions nowadays.
So
in fact, you're not telling me anything.
There was actually a humanoid robotic company in the US that I think their seed was 20 or 30 million.
Seed.
Well, we're not at that. So.
Yeah.
While we're considered deep tech and need a lot of funding, we're actually operational already. So we've got robots on the ground. So we're kind of making headway. So it's not a huge leap that we need. We just need a little bit of funding to scale up.
And I presume that what you're doing is the software, and you're not actually building them out the back.
No, we are. We're building everything in house. Yeah.
Are you?
Yeah. So
I was thinking about that, and I said, they must outsource to somebody, you know?
No, some companies actually buy off-the-shelf robotic bases and will, you know, use them to do various tasks like in hospitals or hospitality settings. But those bases are usually made for warehousing. So they're really big. they're not really going to move around a really cluttered hospital environment. So we've designed our, we felt we needed to be able to design a robot from the ground up and in-house. And a lot of that was actually done through the research group. And when we started with Stevie, a lot of the technology there, we already had a head start. So while we do outsource some of the fabrication, we do all the assembly in-house and the design is all our own.
How's your welding?
we don't go that far.
What size is Violet? I mean, in terms of she...
So it's 2 meters two meters high, nearly. Yeah, because the light needs to be able to shine from a height, so it needs to get as much of the area as possible. So yeah, people see a picture of it and think it's maybe a little bit smaller, but no, it's quite big.
So 2 meters tall and width or
width is about 60 centimeters.
Okay.
So it's kind of we built it to be able to fit in around, you know, a CT scan machine. A busy environment. So hospitals, everything will work great in the lab. And then you bring it onto site into a hospital around people and it's chaos. So it's taken us a while to be able to build it out.
And I presume this is these are early days. So you have just this machine, but I presume you've also thought of lots of other little robots, including robot nurses and everything else.
Yeah, there is. It's becoming an area. They're saying that healthcare is the next area that robots are going to take off because of the labor shortages.
The Japanese have introduced nurses to old folks' homes and places like that, haven't they?
Yeah, exactly. And there's in the US, there's a company called Diligent and there's a company called Relay Robotics that are doing delivery in hospitals. So it's becoming a really big area. There still is very few startups in it. We're one of them. So it's kind of, you know, we're building out the infrastructure to be able to manage robots in a hospital. So we're building kind of a hub screen in rooms that you can call a robot. So if the hospital buy more robots, they'll be able to use our infrastructure and our maps and our information. So it's kind of exciting being one of the first companies on the ground.
Anybody in Ireland using you yet?
So it's mostly in the UK and we're working with Donnybrook Hospital and the Royal Hospital of Donnybrook. They've been really great. We've done a lot of work with them right now. So they'd be our main partners in Ireland. But
Violet, does she live in Donnybrook Hospital?
There's one in Donnybrook Hospital, yes.
Oh, there's a couple of Violets, are there?
Yeah. And Donnybrook Hospital is actually, they have a new wing where I went into the patient room and was like, if I get ill, I want to go here.
Good for them. It's so nice.
It's a lovely, lovely place. And they really kind of care about, they want to be one of the kind of leaders in terms of infection prevention and control. So it's really important to them. So they've worked with us.
So first stop is Donnybrook. Mm-hmm. Then you go, are you in how many places in the UK?
So we're in 2 hospitals in the UK. So we're starting a deployment over in the UK in an NHS hospital in Friaridge.
Starting
In 2 weeks. So 2 robots are being sent over. So they're ready to go.
And you have to go to hospital and sit and live in hospital for a few months.
Yeah, we go to, you know, support the deployments a bit, but with the hope that in a month to 2 months, you know, they can take it over. But yeah, it's very exciting.
And then the big one. The US of A.
Yes, exactly.
How are you going to crack that one?
Yeah, so they're actually a bit more open to UV technology. And there's a couple of companies like the ones I mentioned before, where it's not robotic, but it's UV light they've used. So we have, it's kind of confidential, but we will be heading over to the US to the West Coast in a month.
Kind of confidential.
I can say that we're going to the US to work with a hospital over there.
Brilliant.
Yeah, so it's really exciting, a really big hospital.
And can I ask how that introduction was made? Because that's what everybody always wants to know. Mm-hmm. How do I crack it?
Yeah, it's really, so I remember someone told me once, it's all about the connections and people you know. So, you know, we went over to TechCrunch, actually with Enterprise Ireland, arranged for a group of startups to go over to TechCrunch. And we pitched there and we started talking to some VCs in the San Francisco area. And they put us in touch with an accelerator over in LA, which we got accepted to. So
fantastic.
Can't say which one.
So you will raise your cash. Mm-hmm. What kind of, I was going to ask you, what kind of money are you looking for? We know what kind of money, but are you looking for health investors or that kind of thing? Or
are you happy
to take anybody's money?
I guess anyone, like we really want to work with value add investors. So, you know, people that know the space we're in, that aren't afraid of hardware. Even though we really work on what's called robotics as a service. So it's a service space. So they don't actually buy the robot. They buy the cleaning usage. So it's kind of not really that a hardware play so much as a service play.
And that's interesting. Why did you choose to do that?
It's becoming a lot more popular. So we chose that for two reasons. So firstly, the hospital don't have to pay this upfront fee. They can make use of it on a monthly basis. It's a lot more manageable for them. And then on our side, we are able to continue to work with the customer. So we can upsell in certain areas, offer additional services like the digital tools and the apps I talked to you about. And then there's a reoccurring revenue as well. So it's becoming really popular in the industry.
And I presume if you can clean hospitals mm-hmm. to a very, very high level, you can clean lots of other places. Where mm-hmm. else could you deploy Violet and any of our pals?
Yeah, I guess hospitals are a good starting point because it's where it's probably needed the most. But yeah, there's manufacturing. Like there's a lot of things that can't be cleaned with chemicals in manufacturing that they actually use UV. Agriculture is, we actually have gotten reached out to a couple of times because growing crops and indoor farming, if there's viroids or different kind of types of viruses attacking the plants, they're starting to look at new ways of cleaning.
That's interesting. Yeah, I haven't heard of that one.
Yeah, we actually got contacted by, so cannabis is being a really big crop in the US, have been contacted by so many companies like that. It's you really do get reached out to by so many different organizations looking to use robots.
But I'll go back to the numbers again. Yeah. 140,000 healthcare facilities, 70 million treatment rooms. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't matter if you had a seed round of 100 million.
Yeah.
You're not going to service that with that kind of money. In other words, you're going to need vast amount of money.
Yeah, I think that, yes, we will probably need to raise money.
Big money.
Eventually, maybe looking at funding instruments. Yes. Well, that's the goal for everyone, really.
It is. Eventually. Yeah. I love to hear this.
Yeah. That's what we want, though.
Yeah.
You know, that is the final goal. And it's an area that is underserved right now. So we kind of have the benefit of being first movers in it.
So you're dreaming big.
Yes, of course.
You better give a shout out to some of your co-founders because it is a brain's trust in
100%.
There. I was looking at your website, which is a lovely website, whoever designed it for you. And the only thing is I wasn't able to, you've done it deliberately. I couldn't cut and paste it, which is...
we didn't do that deliberately.
Well, you should. It's a way of people not messing with your stuff. And so give a shout out to your co-founders.
Yeah, so
Who they are and what they do.
Yeah, so we have a really big team. I'll give a shout out to the whole team as well. So our co-founders, because robotics is such an area where there's hardware, electronics, software. So we have Eamon Burke, who builds and manufactures the robot and all the designs.
So he's
got
the welding machine.
You see, CNC machine, yeah. So all the designs you see for Violet and Stevie, he's come up with them. And then we have Mike, who's, you know, a PhD in robotics, was a Trinity Scholar.
He got
the 600. You always need one of them. Yeah, one of the smartest people I've ever met. He manages a lot of the technology and the electronics. He's super smart and keen. So Keane Donovan actually was in Trinity, left Trinity, one of the people that doesn't need to go to college because he's so smart. So he does all the infrastructure.
People.
He's so intelligent. He lives, breathes, eats technology. He's kind of into our security, our DevOps, all the kind of making sure the code runs efficiently on the robot.
He's probably the guy who stopped me from cutting and pasting.
He probably is. He probably has your IP address there saved. And then our CEO, Connor. So he was a professor in Trinity. So he started the research group in Trinity. And at the time, it was actually one of the first and only robotics research groups in Ireland. So he kind of started that and it's still going today. They're still building robots there. They're tinkering with Stevie. And it's all from Trinity, except me.
And when will all of this come together? When will we see the IPO? When will we see, what's the dream?
Yeah, I guess, you know that question, where will we be in 5 years?
Well, I didn't want to ask that one. It's too obvious.
Well, in the next year anyway, we want to have 20 hospitals on board.
Okay.
So we're working tirelessly towards that. But yeah, in 5 years, I would want to have presence in the US, a big presence in the US, Europe and the UK. So you know.
We are going to help you because I know you're heading for the West Coast, but I'm going to make sure that you're going to be located in the East Coast, in my favorite little place of Connecticut, because Connecticut is also a center of medtech.
Oh, yeah.
And they would love to have you there.
Yeah.
And there are people there who invest a vast amount of money in medtech, and I want to make introductions there as well. So the final question that we ask all of our guests, and you know what it is, who would Niamh Donnelly hire in a heartbeat?
Well, I don't know if he'd work with us. I'd say we're too small, but it would be Liam Casey. So Mr. China, the person you go to when you want to scale.
I've never met him, Anna, but obviously everybody knows all about him.
Yeah.
I must throw an invitation out to him.
Yeah.
And when he comes in here, you can have the chat. You can come back in again and have a chat.
I'll offer him the job.
Yeah. Probably still too busy. But he used to have some vast number of people working for him, but I don't know what the situation is now.
Yeah.
So that is fantastic. So please do keep in touch with us, and we will make many introductions for you. And we might even find you some cash out the back of the back of the couch. Niamh Donnelly, co-founder of Acara, thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show.
De Facto, the revolutionary shaving oil, changing the face of shaving. For the smoothest shave of your life, just add water. No more lathering up or cleaning up afterward. Just add a few drops of water and you're ready to go. De Facto's blend of all natural oils hydrates and protects your skin. No more razor burns or irritation. A spa treatment for your face. Perfect for all skin types and lasts so much longer than traditional foams or gels. De Facto, a shaving revolution. Just add water. Available from selected pharmacies and from defactoshave.com.
It's all go, let Chrissy know on thatgreatbusinessshow.com. That great business.
And that is it for episode 180 of That Great Business Show. Great business insights and inspiration on every episode. And don't forget to head for mentorswork.ie to unlock the full potential of your business. It's a fully government-funded mentoring program designed to fuel the growth of your business, no matter the sector or the size. Do sign up for email updates and we will send you your own personal copy of the podcast at thatgreatbusinessshow.com. Do share, do like, and do give us 5-star reviews. I really, really mean it. It does help us. Advertise with us on That Great Business Show to engage with our incredible audience of entrepreneurs, business owners, business wannabes, investors, students, the whole gamut. We record at the Dublin South Podcast Studios, where today's studio engineer is the delightful Alison O'Dwyer. And later, the dynamic duo of studio manager Peter Rice and post-production engineer Neil Horner ensure we remain the world's best-sounding business podcast. So for me, Conall O'Moran, we host you all on the Slán Tamall.